Please remember this is an adults-only podcast and does contain some very sensual themes. So please, only listen to this podcast if you are happy to explore your deepest sensual fantasies with me and are of a suitable age. Hi, it's Devlin, and I'd like to welcome you to another edition of Wild in Bed, your Sunday night destination for salacious entertainment and erotic stories. Now please don't forget to subscribe, and hey, if you've got any ideas, just leave a comment. Tell me, what would you like changed? What would you like more? This is your show. It's your pleasure. So let me know. This week I've managed to secure a chapter reading of a new book. Yeah, a whole chapter now. They don't come around often. And I promise you, it's as hot as a barbecue in Texas on a summer's day. I would try to do a Texan accent just about that, you know, just slot it in, but I can't. I just can't. Let's just forget that one. Now, the book comes from Lacey Hightower's critically acclaimed series, Sugar and Sin. It's book two. It's called Call Me Sweetheart. And it takes us further into the erotic adventures of our favourite threesome. Now, I don't know if you've read part one, Call Me Sugar. If you have, then you'll know that the practical tribulations in being in a menage romance really came to bear. Although it didn't break up the relationship, it certainly changed things and left us with a really big question hanging over the whole situation. And that's really life, isn't it? I know a lot of romance authors skip around reality and let's all paint it hearts and flowers and stuff, but it's, yeah, life just isn't like that. It's just not that clear cut. And I find that across most art romance, unfortunately. Real life just doesn't come into it. It's just like, here's the story, it's in its own little bubble. Reality doesn't need to touch, but it's what Lacey does very well. She brings reality into it. She's very empathetic with the emotions, the stresses people would feel. But in truth, I mean, we all know it, don't we? It's through those challenges, it's through going through those difficulties that relationships truly develop into something a lot stronger than just three people who happen to be in love and obviously are getting it on all the time. Now, for me, the big thing in Call Me Sweetheart is Jason. That's for me. He was great in Call Me Sugar, but I wanted to see more of him. And in Call Me Sweetheart, we can see him coming into the man he really, you know, he knows inside of him. I'm not going to give anything away, but he does have a whole new set of motivations. And he really makes it happen. He brings that to the party. Now, I've been irritating Lacey for a little while now to let me read this particular chapter because I think, and this is just my opinion, it gives a real feel for Jason's pains and challenges and a glimpse of the man he's about to become. It's also damn hot. It is. It's sexy ass. Let's be real. You don't lay in bed listening to this just for an exposition on someone's character. So, okay, chapter three. This is Call Me Sweetheart. And I will read to you. If you're laying in your bed, nice and comfortable, you might want to close your eyes. You know how much better it feels when you close your eyes. So take a breath and just let all the stresses of the week go. Just relax. Chapter 3, Jason. When I was 15, my dad announced over a dinner of grilled hamburgers and my mother's tropical fruit salad that we were making another move. This time to some small shithole of a town in far west Texas called Spring Hill. My dad was a hard-working man. An oil field worker, raised in a family of six in southeastern Massachusetts, William Nathaniel Lee, decided way before he graduated high school that the oil field was the place for him, and not the cranberry box, where he'd watched his father and many of his peers work since he was a young boy. Oil field work guaranteed good money, and didn't involve fancy educations or high-powered skills, just hard manual labour. Dad had gone to work with William Sr. many times growing up. He'd seen it all. Grueling hours of standing in flooded bogs from dawn to dusk. Back-breaking physical work in the cold rain. Dealing with insects, weeds and fungi. William Jr., aka Dad, or Pops, chose roughnecking over the cranberry bogs in his early years. Earning a decent blue-collar living for his family, but also requiring moves from city to city, state to state, following the ever-changing ups and downs of the oil and gas industry. 3 changes of residency in 4 years meant another new address, another new school, boxes to unpack, new people to meet, new churches to join. Leaving was never easy. But this move had been more than just setting up a new house, making new friends or adapting to a new town. This move changed everything. It was life-defining, a turning point, one that would forever change who I was and who I would become. I stood in the cafeteria line, new to town, alone, uncomfortable, staring at what they called meatloaf. Mediocre looking at best. There wasn't much of anything I wouldn't eat, other than anything green and classified as a vegetable. But the overpowering scent of garlic in this place had bile rising up my throat. Perfectly squared cubes of grey-looking meat. Vegetables that were near mush. Dried mashed potatoes that were most definitely instant. I grunted in disgust.
Looks like utter putrid shit, doesn't it?
The low rumbling tone had me spinning on my feet and looking to my right. His voice was heavy. It was powerful, robust, one that demanded you listen as it spoke. It was cultured and smooth but potent, commanding and possessive. And when I got my first good look at him, I would have dropped my last dollar that he had to be from one of those swanky ranching families in the area. It wasn't that he was dressed particularly fancy, but he just had that kind of aura to him that stopped you in your tracks. Features strong and defined, eyes the colour of the earth, lips full, thick and bending into a sly grin, slightly wavy, tousled dark hair, all framed by a distinguished chin and muscles rippling underneath his shirt that made my body flush warm. Just one look at this guy and his wide shoulders, flat stomach and long, sturdy legs clad in faded Levi's leading to scuffed brown Western boots. And I was positive that he was someone special, someone who would be in my life for years to come. I felt drawn to him, like right then and there he was claiming me with silent whispers that one day I would be his. From that very moment, I wanted to know him better. My God, I ached for him in wrongful ways. A boy was only meant to know a girl. Ways I knew were unethical and unjust and ungodly. Ways that for the next 2 years of my life, I would try my best to forget and overlook. Ways that would only grow stronger as I grew older. Smells like utter shit as well, I responded, while wondering why someone like him chose to eat someplace like this, when surely he had a hired cook and fancy meals waiting for him at home. He took a step closer, his shoulders almost touching mine, his chocolate eyes narrowing as he held out a strong hand. While shame, remorse, and a deplorable urgent need and hunger sucked the air from my lungs and lodged deep in my throat, In that split second, something powerful and almost soothing told me this person would one day be my kindred spirit, my soulmate, and my eternal companion.
Keith Riker.
His lips curved when he held out a hand to shake. The sound of his cultured voice electric, the glimmer in his eyes bright, and yet flashing with something dark, wicked, and powerful. Name's Jason Lee. Glad to make your acquaintance. Less than 5 years later, I was following the old man's footsteps, working in the oil patch, hauling parts to far-flung sites, roughnecking on a pulling unit, and living the life of a bisexual man. And now in my mid-30s, I've moved up the ladder and landed myself a good-paying job with a nice retirement package and a long list of quality benefits. I've travelled all over the world, met hundreds of interesting people. I've visited beautiful blue sandy beaches, high snow-covered mountains and cities full of trash, smog and poverty on every other corner. Working in the oilfield industry has given me the opportunity to relocate to a long list of cities and states, and even countries. Yet out of all the white sandy coastlines, snow-covered Alps kissing the heavens, and peaceful drifting waterfalls, I chose Spring Hill for one reason, to be part of my daughter's life, even if she doesn't know who her true biological father is. And there are times that I feel like life would be simpler somewhere else. Deep down, I know I wouldn't have it any other way. But along with the good times come the bad. Picking up where I left off has been hard, excruciatingly. While I live out my life in Spring Hill, enjoying my growing bank account, driving fancy cars, and travelling the world, I'll stand by Keith and Jen. I'll watch them live as man and wife, share tender touches, trade loving smiles, raise children, while I remain the same old Jason. A man torn, a man lonely, a man broken. Keith and Jen will carry forward. They will live on, move ahead, and have everything as I stand firm. Survive, persevere. Pretend that my insides aren't in bloody painful pieces, and continue to have nothing. My mind is in shreds. At no time have I ever considered something so vicious as this in the small country town of Spring Hill. Arson! Motherfucking hell! What I've just witnessed is a picture I will never erase from my mind. Water runs down my back and releases some of the tight tension while I scrub the nauseating stench of smoke from my skin. 15 minutes, maybe longer, have passed since I stripped out of my soiled clothes and stepped inside the shower. But I can still feel the heat of the flames, still smell the ruins of destruction, still see pain flashing in Jen's eyes, anger, rage and guilt in Keith's. All as I stood shocked, helpless, hopeless, yearning to comfort Jen in my arms, desperate to relax the remorse and stress from Keith just the way I know he likes. Christ, I pine for all that I've lost. Some days I'm not sure if I'm alive or dead with this hole in my bleeding heart and aching, cold and bitter. I just want him and her and us so motherfucking much. Steam has misted the mirror and clouded the air when I step from the shower. I flip on the exhaust fan and then reach for a towel with a wave of fatigue creeping up on me. I'm suddenly tired as fuck, ready to grab a bite to eat and crawl into bed. And after I toss the wet towel onto the vanity, I leave a trail of water behind me and saunter into the attached bedroom, naked, my body hard with need. My mind swirling with a dozen thoughts. Jesus fucking Christ! Nothing like sneaking up on a man when he's naked. Keith is standing with his hip against the doorframe, His hands are in his pockets. His eyes are glued to mine and glazed over with a look that I know all too well. He's tired, he's stressed, he's worried. He's hard as iron underneath his jeans. For seconds that feel like minutes, we both stand and stare. Neither of us speaks. His cocoa-hued gaze doesn't budge. It's like cement against mine. When I can no longer stand to look at his symmetrical bone structure, the high and prominent cheekbones, a tightened jaw rough with several days of stubble, and that perfectly thick erection that I'm dying to touch, I break the uncomfortable silence. What the fuck are you doing here? Something dark, something deep, something threatening flashes behind his hardened expression. A look I crave and need and long for, and one that almost undoes me.
I think you know why I'm here.
He takes long strides in my direction, boldly, fearlessly, and stops only inches in front of me with his lips coiling in some sullen kind of emotion. For a fraction of a minute, his gaze lingers on mine, his eyes dark and stormy. He slides a rough hand down the length of my stomach and stopping at my dick.
Your eyes are hungry,
he says with a husky drawl.
That beautiful cock of yours is dripping with arousal.
He presses his warm lips into the hollow of my throat that I feel absolutely everywhere.
And your neck is flushed, boy.
And with that, his fingers are sliding underneath the back of my hair. He's pulling my lips to his, swallowing them. His tongue dipping deep, probing and stroking as he kisses into my mouth with a desperate ferocity. Like he not only craves a kiss, but more of a have-to-have kind of kiss.
I fucking need you. You need me. We complete each other. So stop fighting what's inevitable.
With one hand palming my length and the other moving around towards my windpipe. His jaw tenses when I inadvertently release a sensual moan. Every damn thing he does feels so fucking good. I want nothing more than to let him take me out of this hell-filled misery, bend me over, sink his teeth deep into my flesh, and then feed every inch of his cock inside me until he's balls deep. With his hand pressing against my throat, I can barely catch my breath. My hands itch to reach out and touch him. My knees are shaking to drop before him. My lips crave the taste of his warm, salty release. And my cock is hard and ready to turn the proverbial page, to flip him over, spread him apart with my palms and take him hard and deep with no compassion, very little or no lube, and show him that I'm not the same Jason as before. Right now, at this moment, I'm not his boy. I do none of these things, I'm thinking. Instead, I pull back, my chest bored with emotion, my body in confusing misery, my heart splitting, right down the middle. No, I managed to say without falling apart. We're not doing this. You're married. You have two girls to raise. My daughter to raise. And whoever did this to the museum knows something. You damn well know it. And I won't put the people I love at risk. So just go. Fucking fuck. This is the hardest thing I've ever done. The worst pain I've ever felt. Part of me wants to apologize for what I've just said and ask him, plead with him not to go. The other side of me hears my dad's voice, telling me to stay strong and stand tall. Before any words form, his thumb is brushing my chin and his lips are crushing against mine again. My body is weakening, my willpower turning to dust. He moves lower and sucks hard at the sensitive part of my neck, teasing, taunting, punishing and tormenting with the wicked warm feel of his mouth and the small touch of pain and pleasure he knows I crave and desire.
Seeing my marks on your neck turns me to fucking stone.
His lips pressed to my ear, with your dick that damn hard and your heart thudding against your chest. Give me one good reason to believe you don't want me to stay. Stop playing these mind games, Jason. Let me give you what we both need, what we've always needed. There's almost an urgency in his tone, one that pulls a moan from my chest. He shifts, then bites, shifts again, bites again, and leaves what I know will be a red trail underneath my ear. Christ, Keith. He steps back and we share another long moment of miserable silence with his hands still squeezing at my cock. His eyes are fixed, hungry and damn near black. They're pinned to mine like unmovable magnets.
Jason, I don't want to leave. I don't think I can.
Grudging, bitter torment fills his tone, while his gaze turns to liquid.
I miss you. God help me, I miss you. She misses you. The three of us need to be together.
Jesus, I respond without breaking eye contact. People will talk. People will motherfucking crucify. They already have. Confusion stirs like bubbling acid inside my chest. I crave this man more than should be humanly possible. This pain, this incessant need inside me, is worse than any form of hell. More agonizing than an open wound, more excruciating than burning flames against my chest. Every word he's spoken is true. I want the three of us. I long for him and me and for my time with Jen. He needs to own me, dominate every thought and rule every action. They crawl inside me like a painful cancer and linger like the red-hot fires of the netherworld. But it can't be, it won't work. I've told myself 100 times that it simply isn't logical. Not now. I place my hand on either side of his shoulders. You chose Jen. Jen chose you. You're married. You have a family, a responsibility. Go be with your wife. She's upset, she's scared. She needs her husband right now. And she loves you so much, damn it. Just go. His eyes glisten with torment, frustration, and anger. He gives a huff of laughter, then runs a rough finger over my trembling lips.
And who the fuck do you think sent me here, Jason?
It doesn't matter. Go home, Keith. So, that was from Call Me Sweetheart. I hope you enjoyed it. Go out and buy the book. It's really good. Really good. Really good. I bought it when it came out on Thursday. It's really, seriously, very hot. Leave reviews. You need to leave reviews. Really. Authors feed on reviews. They don't need money for food. They don't buy food. They eat reviews. They print them often. It feeds them. Seriously. Okay, next week. Doing something a bit different. Yes, we are. I'm going to surprise you with this one. There is a story. There's a story. We're going to do it a bit different. Bit of fun. Do you fancy some fun next week? Some dirty, salacious fun? Just to make you smile. Yes, so next week, same time. I hope you've enjoyed this wild in bed. I look forward to seeing you. 10 p.m. Central Standard Time next Sunday. And you know we can get wild in bed again. But for now, and always with your pleasure in mind, this is Devlin Wild. Now, as you have enjoyed this show this evening, you can go ahead and subscribe to my podcast so you don't miss another salacious episode. And you know you can go ahead and visit me at wilddesires.com and grab your own free experiential erotic story just for coming.